Hello everyone and welcome. Welcome to an exploration of a most interesting and important subject, which is the ashram. Master DK had a lot to say about the ashram, and there are many, many references to be found mainly in discipleship in the New Age. So here, because of necessity, we will be focusing our exploration of the ashram on manifesting the vision and thought of the ashram. So this being a very broad topic, we've narrowed down the field a little bit. So we're going to be focusing on how we can be agents of manifestation for the vision and thought of the ashram. The vision and thought that have the power to change the world. Before we get started, I'd like to introduce our team today. Our webinar team consists of Brett Mitchell, Joe Walls, Kay Hannon, who are the webinar and technical support staff, and also Eva Smith, who will be helping you to participate in this webinar. Because yes, this webinar is meant to be participative. So in order to participate, you'll have the ability to ask questions or to write down questions, and Eva will help you to do that. For those who have not attended a webinar before, let me spend just a couple of minutes to make you familiar with your webinar screen and how you can control your participation. So if we look at your screen, if you look at the audio block down there, you will see a plus sign. If you see a plus sign, then press on it to open up this box. And then you'll see two buttons, telephone and mic and speakers. So unless it's different now, you should have mic and speakers on. So this will enable us to hear you when you ask your questions. The next point is about the microphone. You will see in your box an icon of a microphone with a green background. If you want to be heard, then you need to unmute yourself, and this is done by pressing on this icon. The staff who are monitoring the webinar will unmute you as required, but you also have control over this function when you've asked a question. So if you go along to your name, then you're able to click on the microphone to turn it on or off. Now you will see also a hand. On my screen right now, you see a hand with a green arrow. If you want to ask a question, i.e. if you want to raise your hand, you click on the hand. And this will alert Eva and the other members of our team that you wish to ask a question. Once you've asked the question, then this little hand will get a downward red arrow, and then you would click that in order to lower your hand. So if you want to ask a question and raise your hand, you click on the green arrow. Another facility is that you're able to write questions or comments. So if you look here in this box, you're able to type a message in the box. And this also is monitored, and your question will be seen by Eva and other members of our team. So I hope that helps to clarify how you're able to ask questions. So in summary then, in order to minimize voice, everyone is muted. So the technical staff is responsible for doing that. For questions, please raise your hand. You click on the green up arrow to raise your hand, and you click on the red down arrow to lower your hand. Also, because of internet connections, you can expect a pause when you're being addressed. So there will be a little bit of a delay, but there's nothing to be concerned about. Some of you may have problems, it's rare, but if for some reason you're having problems with echoes, the first thing is to mute yourself. So if your microphone is on and you're hearing an echo, then you should be muting yourself. If not, then use the question or message function to let us know that you're experiencing audio problems. Okay, so let's get going. The ashram. We have a deepest aspiration within us to unite with that sacred part of ourself that is the soul. Equally, we have a very strong urge to unite with the ashram. In other words, to unite with our spiritual family. I'm sure most of you can relate some very interesting stories or memories about how you yourself discovered your spiritual family. Perhaps it was a person with whom you had great understanding right away, and this person felt very known to you at a very deep level. Or you met a group that had the same mindset, the same life focus and life purpose as you have. And when you met this group, you felt that you were home. You felt that you had really discovered your spiritual family. It may have been a discovery, too, of some teachings. I know that I'll never forget the day I discovered the Blue Books. These teachings spoke to me. They were familiar in a sense that I felt that I was meant to read those books. So these are experiences that we don't forget, and they are life-changing. So being able to find our spiritual family gives us a sense of belonging and brotherhood, because there's such affinity between ourselves and the members of our spiritual family. There's a soul-to-soul connection there that is so powerful that it gives us an experience of brotherhood that is fantastic. The other point that I'd like to mention here, you see on the screen, it says T-A-I-W. This is an evocative word, and it means the ashram is within. Many spiritual seekers go all the way to India and other very remote places in order to find their spiritual group. They are looking for a group of people who are living the life that they want to live, who want to study the teachings that they want to learn, and so on. So there's a tremendous effort on their part to make a connection with their ashram. However, the truth is that we don't have to go anywhere to meet our spiritual family, because the ashram is within. Every moment of soul contact, every moment of soul contact is an experience that brings us in contact with the ashram. And this, of course, soul contact is the innermost, most sacred part of ourselves. So as we touch soul, then we touch the ashram. So it's a process of merging into the ashram. It's a process of living our life as soul and blending and uniting with the ashram or with our spiritual brothers and sisters. Master DK has given us lots and lots of quotes on the ashram, many, many references. So I've selected a few for us to consider today. Here's the first one. An ashram is a pulsating, vibrating, and radiating center. It is a living organism of like-minded souls who come together in order to manifest a part of the divine plan. I must confess here that this is not a quote by DK. This is something that I wrote as a collage of various definitions. I apologize for that, but this is my own fabrication. So if you look at the image here, by the way, the images that I use are mainly meant to be evocative and stimulate the imagination, that there's no way we could have images that portray these subtle and refined energy fields. So here, with this type of image that I have selected, you can see the pulsating and radiating energy coming from the center. And of course, the center is the master. The master is the life and heart of the ashram. So it is a living organism of like-minded souls who come together in order to manifest a part of the divine plan. So like-minded souls, we'll talk about that later, a little later. But the idea that we come together to do work is a very important part of defining the ashram. So the mission of the ashram is to manifest a part of the divine plan, this part of the plan that has been given to the master of the ashram in order to manifest the overall plan, the divine plan. So this definition has a lot of key words in it, and I'm wondering if anyone has a question or a comment to make on what has been said so far. So feel free to raise your hand. The more participation there is, the better this webinar will be, because hearing you and your impressions is important for everybody's learning, for everybody's experience today. So don't be shy, and who's going to be the first one to venture forth? Any hands, Eva?
No, no hands. You're doing
no
just
hands?
Fine. No hands right now.
No hands right now. Okay. Okay, we will continue. Let's talk about how ashrams are organized before we go deeper into defining an ashram and describing how we enter, progress within it, and then be in a position to manifest its vision and thought. Ashrams are organized along the rays. And for those of you who know the rays, you know that there are seven rays. Therefore, there are seven main ashrams. So ashram on ray one is the ashram will or power. Ashram on ray two is the ashram of love, wisdom, and so on. Now, each ashram also has sub-ashrams. So for instance, the ray one ashram has a ray 1-1, which is pure first ray energy, but it also has ray 1-2, and there's ray 1-3, 1-4. So this is a subdivision of the ray one ashram where the quality of an other ray is part of its expression. So ray 1-2, for example, is the ray, the ashram of will or power, expressing also the love wisdom energy, the love wisdom quality. So when all the ashrams become active, and they're not all active at the moment, but when they all become active, then there will be 49 sub-ashrams. So you can see how there's a good variety here in the types of energy and capability for manifesting the plan. So it's a wonderful mosaic of ray energies that work together in order to externalize the various aspects of the divine plan. Now we become affiliated with a certain ashram based on our soul ray. So for those whose ray is on the second, whose soul is on the second ray, then have their home and their spiritual family have their ashram on the Love Wisdom line. So they are grouped together with other Ray 2 souls. So you can see why it's so important to be talking about the soul in relation to the ashram, because the soul is a group conscious being, and it is the way for us to enter into the ashram and to take part in its activity. So there's this affiliation then, according to the soul ray, demonstrates how important it is for us to study the rays and to understand our soul ray, because this is an indication of the nature of our spiritual family. Any questions? Eva, are you seeing any hands?
So far, no.
Okay.
But let me ask, or there is a hand, Sheldon has a hand, but let me ask you a question before
sure.
I open it up to the participants here. The idea of 49 sub-ashrams,
mm-hmm.
Have you a sense of which of the main ashrams is most externalized at the moment? In other words, is it the second Ray ashram, or do you think it might be the first Ray ashram?
Well, I would think that it is the second Ray ashram. For instance, one reason I say this is because this is a second Ray solar system, and the basic energy of our solar system is the second Ray. So it would make sense that the second Ray ashram would be the most deployed and the most active at this time.
I happen to agree with you, but I just wanted to hear your thoughts on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Sheldon is up next.
Okay, Sheldon, hi.
Excuse me, Eva. We did have a question about the definition from Ginny Ross.
Oh, Ginny, hi. Yeah.
May I interrupt with that first? Sorry,
yes.
Sheldon. Ginny asked, would you speak to the idea of a living organism?
Mm-hmm. Yes, each life is part of a greater life, isn't it? So we as human beings are part of a greater life, and we can say that our next greater life is the ashram. So we are a living organism, and we think, we act, we aspire, and we connect with a part of ourselves that is in contact with a greater life than we are. So I think it's the same thing, that an ashram has the master at its heart. It is constituted of disciples who live the life of the soul as a group, and are influenced by the still greater life, which is also an organism, which is the spiritual hierarchy. So it's lives within lives. So if we are a life living within our own energy field, that energy field that is us is also part of a greater energy field that is the ashram, which itself is part of an ever greater energy field, which is the spiritual hierarchy. I hope this answers your question, Ginny.
We're going to move on to Sheldon, and in doing so, I just want to mention that we in the background are going to do our darndest not to use last names, to only use our first names,
mm-hmm.
so that if this is going to be a webinar that's available to the public, we're only going to have our first names.
Hmm.
Okay, Sheldon, you're on.
Okay, can you hear me all right?
Yes.
All right, very good, very good. Thank you for doing this, by the way. It's just wonderful. I just going back to your earlier question about any when you ask any questions, one was formulating that came to mind. The movement from let's say, a soul experience or some contact with soul to the ashram. I was wondering if you want to say a little bit more about how that can happen. Just give the one thought that occurs to me is that, you know, you just said that the soul is group conscious. So one could almost say, just on the basis of a thought, that if we're having some kind of what we would consider to be a soul experience, then it implies the fact that there are others like us, having, if not the same experience, having similar experiences. But what's your sense of how we make that movement from seeking contact with our souls to sensing that we are part of an ashram, part of a group?
Mm-hmm. This is a very good question, Sheldon, and if you will allow me, I'll answer it a little later, because we're going to be talking about the process for entering and progressing within the ashram. And that will all be part of this discussion. And if I don't answer it, you know, to your liking after maybe halfway, if you would remind me, and then I'll try to be more specific.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you. Any other questions?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, so we were here. There's another fantastic definition, another loaded one. An ashram is a grouping of souls who, through identity of thought, vision, and of vibration, are swept by energies which enable the group to carry out the master's plan and meet human need. So isn't that something? So here we have all the key ingredients mentioned here, where I belong to an ashram as a soul. So living the soul life, being soul infused, you know, from just a little bit to total soul infusion, even a little bit of soul infusion puts me en rapport with the ashram. So it's a grouping of souls who, through identity of thought, vision, and vibration. So here we're hearing the being of one mind, being of one purpose, and of vibration. This addresses the whole topic about resonance and affinity, that barriers, spiritual barriers, are caused by differences, by differences in, we'll try to ignore that, by differences of vibration. So if there's no connection, if there's no affinity of vibration, then there cannot be communion, there cannot be union. So the barriers in terms of energies are created by differences in vibration level, in differences in vibrational affinity between individuals and groups, and between groups. So this is a very important concept, and we are familiar with this one, because when we meditate, we are creating a higher vibrational affinity between the personality and the soul. So the same process takes place for us to be coming en rapport, or in synchronicity with the ashram. Continuing, are swept by energies which enable the group to carry out the master's plan and meet human need. So these energies, the energies are horizontal in the sense that it's the energies created by all members of the ashram, the members who are just entering the ashram at the periphery, and high initiates who are very near the center of the ashram and in very close communion with the master. So these energies also are influenced by energies from hierarchy, and in turn also influenced by energies from Shambhala. So the ashram itself is the creator and recipient of multiple levels of energy. So as we enter the ashram and start moving and progressing within it, then we become part of this maelstrom of energies and participate in that life. So our Swetpa energies, which enable the group to carry out the master's plan and meet human need. Again, it's a working group, and we've had this this idea before. So the work and the task of ashrams is to project into the world those thoughts and those formulated divine ideas that embody at any one time the immediate plan for humanity. So I'll stop again. Any questions?
I'd like to ask a question or a comment. It's just interesting to see how thought and vision have to do with the mind. So in order to be part of an ashram, one has to be very much mentally polarized. I don't think those that can actually carry out the work would be anything below that, because how then would you be able to connect, you know, vibrationally and with vision and thought with the master and the energy that's coming through the master?
Yes, absolutely, Eva. The mind has to be held steady in the light of the soul, and the soul is an ashramic member. So as we hold our mind steady in the light of the soul, we are in fact participating in ashramic consciousness. Mm-hmm. So any contact, any amount of soul consciousness equates ashramic consciousness, mm-hmm. to a small degree at first and to ever greater degree as we progress along the path. So our position on a spiritual path actually determines our position within the ashram. So first degree initiates, you know, brand new first degree initiates are very much at the periphery of the ashram, and the third and fourth degree are very much at the center of the ashram, very close to the heart, to the master. So your point about the mind is very important, and when we say that the key for entry into the ashram is soul consciousness, then that means through the mind, that the mind is the platform that is used to project the Antakarana, the bridge of light that will unite the concrete mind with the soul, and then that will unite the soul with what we call the spiritual triad. Mm-hmm. So very much all the work that we do in meditation and in building the Antakarana, all the work that we do with our personality in order to become mentally polarized, all of that contributes to our being qualified to enter and then to progress within the ashram. Mm-hmm. Yes. Do you want to say anything else about that?
Thank you. Thank you. That was good. That was excellent. And there are no other hands, so I think you can proceed.
Okay. Okay. There was one quote, one reference from Master DK that really inspired me and actually was the catalyst for developing this talk, first for studying the ashram and then for developing this talk. And this is the quote. Every ashram or inner group is essentially a reservoir of thought, and that reservoir has for its spring or source the ideas, dreams, vision, and inspiration of the master. Then it becomes a clear pool of thought, augmented and fed from the spring of many lives, from the pure vision and consecrated dreams of many disciples. I don't know if this quote has the same effect with you as it did with me. However, I read into this a tremendous invitation. A tremendous invitation by a master for anyone with, you know, a modicum of soul consciousness to share these elevated thoughts, visions, and the word is consecrated dreams. So these are dreams of the soul. These are elevated dreams from the realm of the soul. So this invitation is for us to contribute to this pool of thought and to augment the quality of the ashram's reservoir of thought. So contacting the thoughts, visions, and dreams of the master is all about first contributing our own, because this is how we establish rapport, this is how we establish relationship, this is how we establish a connection. So it's not a remaining passive and waiting to be tapped on the shoulder, say I've arrived, or being told now you're now, you know, part of this ashram. This is not it at all. This is that we make the first step, that we make the first offering of our thought and vision and contribute to the ashramic pool. So it is a contribution, it is a contribution, it is a dual responsibility, it is an exchange of energy between the disciple and the ashram. Mm-hmm. This invitation also acts as a magnet. So here we have the master as the heart of the ashram sending out this invitation that is basically a magnet to attract us to the ashram. I said earlier that there is a very strong drive within us to find our spiritual family and to be drawn into it. Well, we have this urge that is innate within us, but there's also the master at the center of the ashram acting as a magnet to amplify this drive, so that we can progress and achieve our spiritual goal. So by contributing, by opening the door, we're enabling the master to then becoming more powerful in attracting us towards the ashram. Another quote about the reservoir of thought is, the group of every master is distinguished by its thought content, contributed by the disciples and used by the master in his work for humanity. So this continues the same theme here. So being of one mind, contributing our thoughts, is contributing to the ability of the ashram to do its work for humanity. So what about the vision? Because the master talked about thought and vision. So what about ashramic vision? So this is a quote from Dina 1 that addresses this question. But the vision with which you should be concerned is to become aware of what the soul knows and what the soul sees through the use of the key to soul vision, the intuition. So if you reflect on the power of this quote, this reference, it positions the soul as the center and the conduit for us to be able to tap into the higher vision. And the higher vision is a vision that is perceived by the soul. And the higher vision is formulated by our capacity to be intuitive and to tap pure reason and the rain cloud of noble things, so that we go beyond the mind and reach the plane of intuition in order to become in contact with a formulated vision while it is still on the plane of the intuition before it gets changed and very often distorted by the little minds of men. So the intuition then is brought into the picture as the source of the ashramic vision, and the soul being the conduit, being what allows us to reach the plane of the intuition, which is the Buddhic plane. For those who among you who may not be totally familiar with the planes, here's a representation. So here we have seven planes, and they go from more dense to more subtle, as in very subtle at the first. So here we have the physical etheric plane, the emotional plane or astral plane, mental plane, and here's the buddhic plane. So the buddhic plane is the fourth plane, counting from below, and it is also the fourth plane counting from above. So it is a plane that is referred to as a plane of atonement. This is a plane of meeting between the higher and the lower. The lower being these three planes and the higher being the logoic, monadic, and ethnic planes. So ashrams are located on the buddhic plane. So ashramic consciousness means also buddhic consciousness. So it is soul consciousness that has a connection with the buddhic plane and the intuitive faculty that we all have once we reach that level of consciousness. So these are planes of consciousness. The mental plane here is where the soul resides, in the higher levels of the mental plane, very close to the buddhic. And the soul is the intermediary between the lower mental, that as Eva mentioned before, the concrete mind, and the buddhic realm of the intuition. Another diagram that may help you to visualize this is this one, where here we have the three main parts of our constitution, the spiritual triad, the soul, and the personality. And this bridge of light is what is referred to as the Antahkarana. And this bridge of light is what we create with the collaboration of soul to establish links between different parts of ourselves. So the link between personality and soul is called the lower Antahkarana, and then there's another part of the link between the soul and the spiritual triad. Buddhi is one point in the triad, so we have Atma, Buddhi, Manas. So Buddhi is one point in the triad. So this bridge of light that we create through meditation, through study and service, this bridge of light is what allows us to enter into the ashramic consciousness. And having entered there and living the life of the soul that is a member of the ashram, then we're in a position to use the Antahkarana in the reverse in order to manifest ashramic consciousness into the realms of the personality. So via soul, we're able to manifest the thought and the vision of the ashram into the lower worlds. So the Antahkarana, or the bridge of light, is the vehicle of transmission between soul and spiritual triad, between us and the soul, and between us as personalities and the ashram. Are there any questions? We haven't heard too many.
That was so beautifully stated, really.
Huh. Thank you. Okay, well, we'll go on.
No questions.
Okay, here we have, you know, with the bridge of light, is the bridge of light, the Antahkarana establishes relationship. Relationship between personality and soul, and relationship between soul and spiritual triad. It's all meant to be that way. We are meant to establish relationship with soul. Soul, it is one of soul's own desires to establish relationship with the personality. And then for the higher realms, it is soul's desire to be one with the spiritual triad, which is its real home, and to live its life as a resident of the spiritual triad, and in particular, buddhi. So there's tremendous affinity between the soul and the buddhic plane, and we'll get into that a little bit more later on. So as there are relationships between the different parts of us, between the most spiritual and the mundane, there are also relationships within the ashram. So the ashramic relationship is how works get done. The spiritual hierarchy impresses the master of the ashram. I just go back to this picture here for a minute. You see here, you see the ripple effect, right? Where you see how a pebble is dropped in water and then there are waves that ripple outward. Well, here we see different levels of consciousness within the ashram, and then we see the center of the ashram itself, which is the master, to be the recipient of energy from above, this above being here representing hierarchy. So there is an established channel of communication between hierarchy and the master. So the hierarchy is the keeper of the plan, formulators of the plan, and the master is the instrument for manifesting this plan via the disciples in his or her ashram. So here, as the master receives the divine will interpretation, the divine will presentation of the plan, then the master processes this divine intention with the ashram. So the flow of energy, then the flow goes from spiritual hierarchy to master and from master to ashram at large, the ashram being the instrument or being the orchestra for creating the total music, for manifesting, for achieving the mission of the particular ashram. And then the energy flows to the soul of each member of the ashram. So here we have the energy flowing to the ashram at large, and then for each soul within the ashram, each individual having a task, having a responsibility in this overall sacred work. And you see here that the disciple is dual in the sense that the disciple as soul is a member of the ashram, and then the disciple as personality is the instrument for the ashram to achieve its mission. So you see the importance here of the disciple being able to live the dual life, the life of the soul and the mundane life of the world, as an instrument for manifesting the plan. So this ashramic relationship, based on synchronization and vibrational attunement among the parts, they govern the ordered descent of energy through the planes and from the highest to the lowest. So the disciple here is a distribution point of the ashram for the manifesting in the lower planes, manifestation in the low planes of the thought and vision of the ashram through specific array of responsibilities. Disciples may actually make the plan live, externalize the plan on the lower mental, astral, and physical planes of consciousness. It's all it follows lines of least resistance. It follows lines of vibrational affinity. It follows lines of divine purpose. And it follows lines of love, because the whole process here is based on coherence of relationship, coherence of various parts in being part of the one work. So when we think of an ashram, then, to summarize, it's an organism with a master at its heart. It's a center of soul consciousness. It's a center of service focused on human need. It's a center of loving understanding and universal love for the betterment of all lives, all kingdoms, not just the human kingdom. It is a complex organism where initiates and masters work together to manifest the plan. So this is a repetition of what was said already, and as a summary of where we've been so far. Any questions?
while everyone is coming up with a question, I'd like to ask another question.
Okay. Thank God for you.
I'd like you to go back to the diamond diagram, because I remember that DK has offered us the idea of the diamond in the past, and I know that there is a flow of energy always in order for manifestation to happen via the diamond. I wonder if you could actually show us the zigzag that the energy yeah. actually flows, because you're an expert at this.
Oh, the triangles, yeah. Actually, how energy flows in two triangles base to base like this, well, without a second, on just one triangle or two base to base to form a diamond, that can be found in esoteric astrology in a chapter called The Science of Triangles. So this is an emanating point. This is the point of where the thought is initiated, or where the energy is emanated from, and then the flow goes this way to the ashram overall, and then goes across to all the different souls, and there's a tremendous interaction that takes place at this level, and this is basically where the work gets done. So the purpose is enabled and processed by going back and forth between the ashram and the disciples as soul. And then the descent then goes to disciple. So we can see that from the soul then would go to the personality of the disciple as an instrument. Mm-hmm. One thing I didn't mention yet, which I can at this point, is that no part of us as personality is admitted into the ashram. So when it says disciple here, we're talking about the personality. So we're talking about a highly integrated and soul-infusing or soul-infused personality. However, the personality is the instrument of manifestation. There's a magnetic repelling action between the energies that constitute our personality and then the energies of the soul, and then, of course, energies of the ashram. So when we're talking about boundaries, we create our own boundaries to the ashram by not having any soul energy within our constitution, or not having had the connection of soul energy or soul contact, that we haven't developed soul consciousness. Once we do that, then we have, you know, a little toe in the ashram, and then over time, more and more, we can participate and contribute. So there's no personality part of us that is admitted into the ashram. The ashram is strictly a group of souls. Does that do it, Diva?
Oh, yeah, that was excellent. Thank you.
Okay. There's lots more to this in Science of Triangles. It gets really interesting. Okay, now, I was...
Jocelyn?
Yes?
Kay here.
Hi, Kay.
May I ask, what is the role, how important is the role of occult meditation in this developing the Antikarana and the link?
Yeah. It is the method par excellence to achieve that. Meditation allows us to create this connection with soul, which is the Antikarana. Meditation allows us to elevate our vibration in order that there will be less of a barrier between us as personalities and the soul. Also, it allows building the Antikarana allows for the soul to have a channel for its own redemption of the lives that make up our personality. So there's a whole dynamic there of elevation and then downflow that is redeeming us as personality when the soul is using the Antikarana to influence the personality. And then, so when we aspire, when we build our ability to focus and keep the mind steady in the light in meditation, are the mere fact that we are reaching towards soul creates a pathway of energy. It seeds the path for us to travel from personality to soul. And over time, the more we travel this path, then the more potent this antahkarana becomes, and the more powerful this channel is going to be for the exchange of energy between higher and the lower. Does that answer your question, Kay? Kay?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Jocelyn. Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jocelyn, okay. There's a question by BL.
Oh, hi, BL.
Hi, Jocelyn. I just wanted to follow up with what you said about the emanating and distributing triangles. That's found on page 460 of Esoteric Astrology for the students who would like to actually look and see the thing.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's a wonderful chapter. All right. So this whole process of merging into the ashram and uniting with our spiritual family, with our soul brothers and sisters, this takes lifetimes, and we make progress every lifetime, and over time then we're able to advance further and further into the towards the center of the ashram. So this takes many lives. It doesn't happen overnight, and many books have been written about this process, you know, what happens and how to do it, and so on. And of course DK has given us tremendous information about this. So to distill this information, I've invented 5 steps. The first 2 are qualifying and progressing. This is what enables us to live the life, to live the ashramic life, to be there. And the last 3, they allow us to do the work, to be contributing members of the ashram, to receive ashramic thought and vision, to express it, and eventually to manifest it into the world. So if we look at these five steps, we can see that we are progressing into circles of consciousness from the periphery, progressing closer and closer to the master. So the greater our vibrational quality, the ever greater states of consciousness that we achieve, the greater is our capacity to be a conduit for ever more potent ashramic energy. So when we're at the periphery, we can't handle very much high energy because we're not ready for that. So as we progress on the spiritual path, we advance towards the center because we can take it, because our energy constitution is able to receive the very potent energy of the center of the ashram, and to be able to then receive it and express it. So it's a question of qualifying, question of becoming able and earning the right to penetrate deeper into the ashram. So we start at the periphery and then we move towards the center. So the first step then is qualifying. And qualifying, as I said already, the key to admission is soul consciousness. So the part of us that has achieved a degree of soul consciousness, the part of our mind, the part of our emotional body, the part of our etheric body that is able to resonate to the vibration of the soul, that is allowed in the ashram because it has vibrational affinity. So there's no barrier there. There's no magnetic repulsion at all because they all speak the same language, they vibrate at the same level, and they are in tune with the same quality of energy that is emanating from the center of the ashram and also from hierarchy. So soul consciousness is the key. Personality is not allowed in for obvious reasons. Then the next, of course, is the soul-infusing integrated personalities. So that's a bit loaded. So our personalities first integrate, need to be integrated. It means that they need to function effectively in the world. And then soul-infusing integrated personality means that over time there's more and more of the upliftment of the personality by the soul. So even a small degree of soul infusion qualifies us for living a limited life of the ashram, but at the same time, we are able to unite, to merge in to whatever level of capability that we have developed. So there are many, many qualities that we need to develop in order to qualify, in order to be capable of doing ashramic work. So I've just listed, you know, just a few of them here. Self-discipline, obviously, if we're there to do the master's work, we have to be dependable, we have to be responsible, we have to be able to control the personality. So the soul has to be in charge of the personality for us to be dependable workers for the ashram. Decentralization, this is from the personality's angle, the entity, ourselves, we need to be able to identify as soul and to disidentify from the personality, disidentify from a physical, emotional, and lower mental life so that we can concentrate all our energies in maintaining the contact with soul. Anytime we quote decentralize means that we think not as a personality, we detach from the personality, then we're opening this conduit. We're opening a channel of exchange of energy with soul. So decentralization is a repolarization of the personality where we're no longer downward gazing, you know, in our lower mind and in astral and physical, we're upward gazing and we are identifying with our higher self, which is the soul. Silence, that's a big one. There's mental silence, there's emotional silence, and then there's of course physical silence. So to qualify to do ashramic work, we have to be silent so as not to disrupt the energies of the ashram. So a person who is so active mentally, thinking, thinking, thinking all the time, this person, of course, is centered in the personality more than he or she should. Therefore, all that mental activity is perceived as noise, and that is kept out of the ashram. So our strong aspirations to belong to the ashram is a barrier, for instance, because it is not silence, it is disruptive. So there are many ways that we create our own barriers to our entry. Occult serenity relates to being in a state of, in a state of grace, in a state where we have built the relationships with soul and with the ashram whereby we are reliable instruments, whereby we are at the disposal of the higher initiates and the master in the externalization of the plan. So you can see how we can have a much longer list of qualities to be developed. All of them that we know about need to be developed, but these are particularly important in terms of qualifying for ashramic work. Then the next one, the candidate is spiritually impressionable. It goes without saying that we need to be able to receive impressions from higher initiates and from the master in order to then be able to do, to receive and have connection with the ashramic consciousness and then be able to turn around and externalize it. And last one, the candidate has developed a sense of world need. Here we have a person who is knowledgeable about humanity and about the needs of humanity in order to understand what is the most important ashramic endeavor that can meet the current need of humanity, the current world need. So everything is very timely, everything is in the moment. The hierarchy and ashram, they can foretell the future to a certain degree. They can see what's coming down the line. They can see what the needs are going to be in the next century and so on. However, the actual work takes place today in the now, addressing a current need. So the candidate for ashramic work has to be very much in tune with what's needed by humanity in order to be of service. All right. Any questions?
No, but I do want you to know that you've been on for an hour.
Okay, thank you very much. All right. So next we go to progressing. So progressing within the ashram, and Master DK told us everything we need to know about that. In this quote, "The mode of this progressive shifting is response to an ever higher rate of vibratory activity. Just as soon as there exists in the consciousness of the disciple the ability to respond to the quality and radiation emanating from an ashram, he moves forward into that sphere of influence." So there we are. So this is a summary, in a sense, of what we've said so far about ashramic life and about qualifying. And then this talks about progressing. It talks about vibratory activity, so the affinity, synchronicity of vibration, the ability to respond to the quality and radiation emanating from an ashram, so to be responsive to ashramic influence, of course, is what draws us towards the ashram and towards its center. And then he moves forward into that sphere of influence. So here the ashram is labeled as a sphere of influence. So this is very interesting. The sphere of influence, if we look at the ashram as a radiating center of energy, well, the sphere of influence is the ashram itself, but its influence goes beyond its boundaries. And it does influence upward towards hierarchy, and then it does influence downward into the world of man. So the greater the ashramic radiation and potency, the greater its influence in manifesting the plan. So there are stages in progressing, and there the milestones are these ones: intensification of one's vibration and one's sphere of radiatory activity, greater sensitivity to the ashramic vibration, and greater range of awareness towards an ever-expanding sphere of ashramic consciousness. So this is all about affinity. This is all about being in resonance with the energy of the ashram. So it always comes back down to the soul. The more soul conscious, the more identified with soul that we are, the greater will be our sensitivity to ashramic vibration, and greater will be our own radiating circumference, so that radiatory connections will be expanded. So our circle of reception and of influence becomes wider. So higher levels can be touched and lower spheres can be influenced. Again, that's the size, the expansion of our radiatory activity. I've added this little bit here in red because, you know, for most of us, we're not that far in. For some of us, I should say, we're not that far into the consciousness of the ashram because of our degree of soul consciousness and because of our position on the path, which are the same. So it's a nice affirmation, it's a useful affirmation here to realize that wherever we are in the ashram, we stand in our place within the ashram, and from there we can give and receive in abundance. So we don't have to wait. You know, even a little bit of ashramic connection allows us to contribute. But the wisdom in here is to know our place and to know the level of contribution that we are qualified to provide. But whatever it is, it has value, because we remember the invitation by the master to contribute our thoughts, our visions. So he didn't say only your most spiritual, highly evolved, blah, blah, blah thoughts. He's saying the thoughts, your thoughts and sacred dreams. So this is all very important in, number one, realizing that wherever we are within the ashram, we are in a place that is a place of contribution. The next step, of course, after progressing is reception of ashramic thought. So we have entered the ashram, we've been admitted, we are progressing, and of course, in order to do work, in order to manifest the thought and vision of the ashram, we need to be able to receive. So receiving ashramic impression is possible due to the existence in the qualities, in the disciple, of qualities, radiatory activities, and emanatory impulses which correspond to those emanating from some particular ashram. So here, you know, like attracts like, birds of a feather flock together, similar resonance, radiatory activities, qualities allow us to merge and unite with whatever level of ashramic consciousness that we have achieved. So this reception of ashramic thought is also, we have the cross here. So there's reception from the master and higher disciples. And then there's also reception from other members of the ashram who might be at our level of consciousness, that we can all learn from one another, we can all support one another in terms of our achieved consciousness. So there's a tremendous amount of exchange and sharing that takes place on the horizontal line here within the ashram. And of course, then the expression and distribution of ashramic thought and vision into the lower planes, into the lower worlds. So expressing ashramic thought is all about capacity to be impressed and to be an impressive agent. We receive and then we're able to give. So we can be impressed and we can impress others. Expression is the first step towards manifestation, which is the externalization of ashramic thought into the world, into the minds and hearts of men. So the expression of ashramic consciousness is the first step in its externalization and manifestation. So an ashram is a receiving and emanating center of hierarchical impression upon the world. That's very brief, isn't it? That is very succinct and it kind of says it all. Manifesting ashramic thought. So here in this diagram we're trying to portray here the downward emanation and manifestation of ashramic thought from high levels to via the ashram to the lower planes, and this externalization then has a reverse effect to contribute and enhance what was there in the first place. So energy multiplies itself as it descends and then it ascends again. So there's the spiral here, spiral of manifestation, and this is the white magic process, which we won't get into today, but it is the precipitation of substance, of ideas from the higher planes in via the soul, who is the white magician, into lower spheres of manifestation. We can, we could spend a whole webinar on manifestation, so this is a very succinct We have now covered the main points of qualifying, progressing within the ashram, receiving ashramic thought and vision, being able to express, and then as white magicians to manifest it. So the soul is always the instrument that is the intermediary between the higher and the lower. Any hands? No?
We had a question. Patsy would like to know what the reference citation is for the progressing quotation you had on an earlier slide.
Oh, this one. Oh, I apologize. I should have it. I added this today, and I was short of time, and I didn't have time to look for it. However, I will do that. We just need to do a search for the keywords here. I thought that was a much better quote than what I had before, and at the last minute I put it in, but I didn't have time to go look to see where it came from. It was in my notes somewhere, and I just thought I should use it.
So Jocelyn, can you post this quote with the reference in the student union?
Yep. I certainly will.
Okay.
This person has sharp eyes. Who was it? Who asked the question?
Patsy.
Patsy? Thanks, Patsy. Okay.
There are no other questions right now.
Okay, so we'll go on. Okay, now the transition. One important clue towards understanding, to achieving a deeper understanding of the ashram, is to consider that the ashram is a state of mind. So in ashram, we talk about ashramic consciousness, so I just want to put more emphasis on that. In Dina 1, 707, DK says, an ashram is the state of mind of a spiritual group. It is a point of united thought. It is a center for the clarification of the vision. So here's another perspective on thought and vision, and the ashram as being a state of mind. Now, I said earlier that ashrams were on the Buddhic plane. So if we're talking about an ashramic state of mind, we can also say that an ashram is a Buddhic state of mind, because the ashramic consciousness of the ashram is focused on the Buddhic plane, which is the plane of Buddhic consciousness. So an ashram is a Buddhic state of mind. Now what can that mean? How could we qualify what that looks like, and how it is? So I've assembled a few of the markers for Buddhic thinking. Again, this could be a whole webinar. So very succinctly, Buddhic thinking is a state of awareness of unity, truth, spiritual love, loving understanding, illumined and inclusive thought, etc. Manifesting ashramic thought means precipitating Buddhic thinking into the three worlds via the soul. Okay, so there's a new dimension that we're adding to our thought of manifesting Buddhic thought and vision. That manifesting ashramic thought means precipitating Buddhic thinking into the three worlds via the soul. And this Buddhic thinking is what we have identified here. Here's some of the attributes of Buddhic thinking. So manifesting Buddhic thought means changing how humanity thinks to dispel illusion through the loving understanding of Buddhi. We know that the intuition, the plane of Buddhi, is where we can dispel illusion. This is what has dominance over the distortions of the mental plane. So from a plane higher up, from a plane above, we are able to dispel illusion. In other words, we can see truth. We can see the real. And then the discovery of truth is discovery of a tremendous force of coherence. Because, as we said, this solar system is a secondary solar system. And also the Buddhic plane, being the fourth plane, is in great affinity with the love line of our system. If we look at the rays, for instance, the rays 2, 4, 6 are said to be on the love line. This is the soft ray line. Whereas the rays 1, 3, 5, 7 are defined as being on the will line. So in terms of ashramic thought, when we are qualifying it as Buddhic thinking, we are then positioning Buddhic thinking on the love line. So this love line starts, you know, on the monadic plane, but we won't go there today. However, it starts on the Buddhic plane, and then its next point of atonement is within the egoic lotus, the love petals of the egoic lotus, then to the astral vehicle, and then to the heart center in the etheric, in our etheric body. So this is the line of precipitation of Buddhic thinking. This is a line of least resistance for Buddhic thinking, the love line, because this is the line with which it has the most affinity. So here we're talking about changing how humanity thinks, changing the world, by bringing in these qualities of Buddhic thinking. Manifesting ashramic thought and vision through heart centers. If we look at hierarchy, the hierarchy is designated as being the heart center of our planet. And being the heart center, then of course it has tremendous affinity along the love line. And the Christ, who is love, is the heart of hierarchy. Then the ashrams are also heart centers. The center of the ashram is the master. It is the point of life within the ashram, that and its heartbeat is broadcasts or expresses his love for humanity. And this ripple effect then is what is creating the externalization of the ashram. And this externalization is enabled by soul and, of course, the heart center of every human being. So there's a tremendous heart line here that is facilitating the descent of Buddhic consciousness into the very heart of human beings. So this is a tremendous opportunity that when we look at our participation in the ashram and the work that we do to qualify the spiritual work, the meditations, the study, and so on, service, how all that is contributing to our being able to be part and be an effective member of this heartline for manifesting Buddhic consciousness into the hearts of men. So this is the end of the presentation. Maybe now we'll get some questions, I don't know. Let's see.
Okay, there's Sheldon again, and I'm just going to unmute Sheldon. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Okay, thank you. Well, you pretty much covered the question I had from several different angles, Jocelyn. But I was just thinking about, once again, how we make this transition from these higher experiences, we might call them soul experiences, into a sense of a feeling sense of the ashram itself. Mm-hmm. And I just say again that what's two things have been helpful to me in that regard, and they've been more thoughts to get me started, but one is just the notion that if the soul is indeed group conscious, just taking that as a positive assumption, then having one of these or more of these experiences, there must be groups of people who are having similar experiences or similar vibratory experiences. There are groups of people out there, and we occasionally meet them. We meet them at conferences, you know, meet them in various meetings, and we sense that affinity. The other one that's been helpful, but I'd love to hear your thoughts here too, the other one that's been helpful to me, again, it's a thought, but it's that in an ashram, you've mentioned that, yeah, the master and then the senior disciples all the way down through those of us who are closer to the periphery. It must be the case that if everyone is working more or less with the plan in the master's mind, that there are some fairly senior people who are doing some things that may show up in the world, whether they know it or not. So we may occasionally come across activities or video kind of things or just a sign of a group activity that we just respond to and we recognize, hey, I really relate to that. And that might be, in one sense, stimulated, if not caused directly by the activity of some of these senior people in these ashrams. So that's just a couple of thoughts, but I'd like to get your thoughts here.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking you have to be one to know one.
Mm-hmm.
So to recognize ashramic work, we have to be in the work itself, because this is what creates our recognition of what ashramic work might look like in the world. So I'm thinking about application and service. You know, mm-hmm. a little bit of insight, of realization cannot stay at that level. It's much too subtle, much too abstract. It needs to be applied. Right away, we need to manifest whatever little bit that has been touched.
Mm-hmm.
So as we manifest, as we apply in our daily life, the mundane, profane life that we live, how our efforts to apply the insights and realizations in our everyday life, that creates a broadcasting beacon,
mm-hmm.
so that we will be recognized too as being part of the work. And mm-hmm. then the more we are able to do this, the more we will be able to enter into the force field of those other people who are also part of the endeavor that we are being guided to work at. So I think by doing, you shall know them, is what I would say, to translate those soul experiences into ashramic work. So we start very profane, very little, but over time, as we continue to apply, we create an energy field that has to be recognized and that has to become potent in its mm-hmm. Attractiveness. Towards other like-minded people who are motivated the same way we aspire towards the same things.
Excellent. So it's not just enough to, maybe a soul experience can inspire us, but it's by living some of that, whatever guidance we have, we both send out signals and other people notice and we notice them. So as you say, by living it, we attract it. Yeah, wonderful.
And our curriculum is full of that. You know, we're always asked to talk about what we're doing to apply our insights, and also this whole idea, this whole question of service. You know, service is the natural expression of soul contact. Therefore, soul is the server, and we are the instrument.
Yes, nice. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Jocelyn, there are two related questions that came in the question box, but first I just want to note that BL found the reference in Dino 1.
Oh,
at the very bottom. Very bottom of page 753, continuing on to page 754.
Thank
and
you,
I did, we wrote that into the question box for everyone to see.
Oh, thank you. You're wonderful, BL. Thank you.
The question, one of the first questions was, when do we get the feeling to be involved into the ashram, is I believe what the question is. When do we notice that? What precipitates that?
Oh, I think it would be different for different, it's very individual. I think a lot of it depends on our soul ray. You know, when our highest aspirations get some kind of response and we are elevated, we are uplifted by our insights and our mind are more and more able to receive the light of the soul, I think that those instances are, you know, connections that we would notice, but people of different race would notice them differently. So I think that, you know, that a race six, for example, would react very differently to a soul impulse than a first ray individual would. So again, it's a question of, you know, it's another illustration of how important it is to know our rays. So I'm not really answering this question because I think it's very individual, but it is something that we can define as being uplifting and energizing and makes us forget ourselves, makes us get out of the way of our being able to be a beacon of light, to distribute love, and to do work that is altruistic and meets the needs of human beings, whether it's one or a group or a whole country. So the higher we are in terms of our spiritual development, the broader our sphere of influence is, so the more potent we are in galvanizing larger and larger groups of people. So it starts small, and each person, as I said, will recognize it differently, but it takes you out of yourself. It takes you out of your usual preoccupations with affairs of your personality. Eva, can you help me here?
I would just add on to what you've already said, that if a person has a fairly strong sense of what their purpose is, and if that purpose, you know, ends up being for the greater good, I think that that is in a way carrying out part of the greater plan. That has to be a hierarchical impulse, and again, you've covered part of this already, and that has to do also with the quality of the soul ray. You know, a second ray soul would manifest their purpose and that urge to serve humanity totally different than a first ray or a seventh ray soul would. So in that respect, you know, you've covered that. But I just would add on that if you really feel impulsed to do something that in some form is for the higher good, it has to be more than just an impulse, you know? It has to be something that's trickled down through the Atikarana and probably through the ashram.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Very well said. Thank you. BL, you can contribute. Joe, anyone else who has something to say on this subject is welcome to come in.
Looking for hands. Come on, people.
Well, thank you very much, but you've said it very well.
Okay. Well, if there are no questions, then
there is another question that came in.
Okay.
And this question might be a little bit easier to answer, but harder to give the fullness of it. The question is, how do we or can we know the work of each ashram?
Oh, okay. DK, Master DK has given us quite a bit on the work of the various ashrams. As you know, just go back here for a minute. As you know, they are aligned by rays. So each ray has its own quality, has its own expression, and has its own work. So that's one part of the answer, in the sense that the ray of the ashram determines nature of its expression. Another element in here is that there are groups of people who are aligned with certain types of work, and they may be not all of them on the same soul ray or part of the same ashram, but they're involved in similar endeavors. For example, the group responsible for education. You may have secondary souls and third ray souls and seventh ray souls and fifth ray souls involved in collaborating in upgrading, uplifting the knowledge of humanity in dispelling or fighting ignorance. So those who are involved in eradicating ignorance at whatever level, they're a special group focused on education, and they may belong to different ashrams, but they've been brought together by their soul, by their own volition, to participate in this focused work. So where DK talks about C groups, where DK talks about the purpose and the purpose and objective of each ashram, this can be found in the books, of course, in many, many different places. So Joe is right. This is not an easy question to answer because it is very pervasive. It's a very broad question. It's a very good one, and it's at the heart of how hierarchy in ashrams organize themselves and swap workers here and there to do the work. So I mentioned also that each ashram has a sub, right? So the first ray ashram, sub fifth ray ashram, these would be very strong pioneers in the field of science, and they would be the inventors, and they would be the trailblazers, and all this in the scientific field. So you can see how there's a refinement to the work of an ashram based on which sub-ashram is expressing itself. So there's lots of factors involved in this. Eva, can you think of others?
Yeah, I think what you brought up is very, very good, and my mind is going into the internet. And the internet has attracted a great variety of different rays. We see the resources and the third ray of communication. We see the fifth ray that's involved in the science end of it. We see the other rays. You know, right now my mind isn't giving too many good examples, but the whole internet, you needed people to organize this. So you have maybe seventh ray people to organize the way in which it's being set out, you know, the various websites and so on, so that you have a variety of different rays all collaborating and working on this huge, huge umbrella that we call the internet and, you know, the World Wide Web.
Yes. And in the corporate world right now, we see organizations being very fluid in how they organize themselves to do specific work. So you may have a representative from the education department, from finance, from marketing, whatever, and they belong to their own function. However, when a certain piece of work needs to get done, then people are recruited from different parts of the organization to come together as a group and achieve a specific objective that they can all participate in and contribute to its success. So we see this fluidity more and more in the outside world. And this fluidity, of course, exists to much greater degree in the subtle realms of hierarchy and ashrams. Any other questions?
Well, I would just like to share a few comments that people have had. Uh-huh. Jeremy had to leave early, but he says, thank you, au revoir.
Uh-huh.
And Yoki says, beautiful presentation, thank you, big exclamation mark.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
And Iris says, thank you, you've been answering all of my questions as we go along. And Tiffany says, thank you.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, so we're ready to close. Thank you all for being part of our webinar today. And keep posted for future webinars. If you have subjects that you're interested in and you would like to have a webinar be given on a particular subject, please feel free to communicate this interest that you have. You can communicate with me, with Eva, with Kay, anyone on staff here, or you can post on campus your interest. So
is there anywhere on our website? Sorry, is there anywhere on the website that people can communicate their interest?
No.
Okay.
Not that I can think of.
Okay.
No. It's better to if they elaborate. But you see, it's important for us to deliver webinars that respond to an interest that people have. So the more you tell us about what you'd like to hear about, the more we'll be able to produce webinars that meet your needs. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're ready to close the webinar. Goodbye, everyone, and thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.